From WJCT Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech, tech worth talking about. We're here to make technology simple, easy, and approachable for you.
Got a question about your computer, smartphone, tablet, or the internet that you want to ask us? Give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or you can send us an email at questions@deemable.com.
So we have been talking about doing a segment on our show pretty much ever since I first had the thought of doing this show. But we've never come up with a good name for it.
That's right. The app segment.
Yeah, we wanted to talk about apps. And something that Tom and I are asked about all the time is, you know, hey, what are some good apps? So we thought up a few names, and you can tell us if you like any of them. Appetite.
No.
Let's see. Satisfy my appetite.
Double no.
Okay. Kiss my apps.
Oh, please no.
Okay. How about spectacular?
Okay.
Do you have any better ideas?
No, I don't. I've got nothing.
Okay. Well, see, we've got nothing. Okay. So here's a challenge for our audience. If you can come up with a good name.
Or at least better than one of those.
At least better than one of ours. Let us know. Leave a comment on our website, deemable.com, with your best idea. Or, you know, give us a call and leave us a voicemail.
Yeah.
But so, Tom, let me ask you, what's your favorite app this week? What has caught your eye recently?
Gosh. Well, I've got, you know, it's hard to pick. There's so many good apps out there. I'll tell you the one that I use constantly.
Now, of course, you're an Android user.
I'm an Android user.
Your choices are probably going to be fairly Android-centric.
Yeah, and okay. That's a good thing to keep in mind with apps. You know, you always have to find out, is this an iPhone-only app? Is this an Android-only app?
And there's a lot of them that are across platform on both, but some of the best apps are honestly only on Android and sometimes only on iPhone.
Yeah, I have a lot of app envy of iPhone. That's the one area I will see ground you guys in. You guys get some awesome...
We got a boatload of apps.
Games and apps. But there are some good ones. One of my favorites is Google Music, actually, and I'm not sure if that's available on iPhone or not.
I'm thinking no, probably not. It's kind of like iTunes. Yeah. It's not available on Android.
But we've talked about it before. Google Music is actually a Google app program. I don't know what you call it.
Does it come pre-installed with it?
Some of them do, some of them don't.
Okay,
so
according to what
phone.
You got.
Yeah, but it's out there in the Android market.
Or Google Play now.
Google Play, that's right. Anyways... you may or may not know, we've talked about it before, but you can upload your entire MP3 collection into Google's cloud.
Right.
You know, and what Google Music does is it allows you to get access to that anytime you have a connection, even just a 3G connection.
Okay.
You can be streaming your own music to your phone. I do this in the car all the time now. I don't even bother loading up my phone with the latest music that I have anymore. It's pointless because I'm just going to be streaming it essentially out of my private collection, and instead of having to choose like, oh, you know, which 500 songs do you want, because I'm a big music fan.
Okay.
I've got thousands of MP3s, tens of thousands.
So it's kind of like Spotify, but it's actually your music.
It's my music.
Okay.
And I can select from my playlist that I've already created. I could create new playlists. You know, it's just great. It gives me full access to my entire music library anywhere I am, anytime, and I love it.
Now, I know with like iTunes Match, you pay $25 a year for it, and it'll take all of your songs, put them in the cloud for you similarly.
Sure, okay.
But it actually does where it will upgrade them to a higher bandwidth. Does it do that with Google Play or Google Music? Do you know?
I'm not aware of anything.
Or is it actually your songs, the actual files
themselves? It is actually pulling up your songs, and in some cases it may convert the format.
Okay.
If your format's weird.
I remember that was one thing that they picked on Google about when iTunes Match came out and said, oh, you don't have to upload your entire...
No,
it
actually...
takes forever.
It literally uploads. Yeah, you actually have to download this program. And this is not the app. This is on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it will take... In my case, it took about 2 weeks. It just runs in the background. And slowly, it uploads your entire collection. But you don't have to really pay attention to it. So, you know, a couple weeks go by, you start using it, and you're like, oh, here's all my songs. You know?
Huh.
So, yeah, but it is physically uploading your files.
Okay.
So, and because of that, only you have access to it. You really can't share with friends because the recording industry would be very, very upset about that.
I'm curious, though, that it does seem like that would be something that could be cross-platform.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you're using iTunes and you can use Google Music on your desktop, you could synchronize those two together.
Yes, in fact, that's what I do because I do have my music all on iTunes because I buy music through iTunes a lot.
Right.
And then, yeah, it actually will, it literally can grab your iTunes playlists and synchronize them.
Okay, that's cool.
So it's very cool.
Well, I've got an app that is, apparently it's only on iOS right now. I think it's only on the iPhone right now. And it is a social network, and oh great, all we need is another social network,
man,
right?
We've got like
we only have 50 of them.
I'm already on like Google Plus, Facebook, Pinterest. Twitter. Do you got for me?
All right, it's called Pear.
Pear, okay.
Now, what makes this social network a little different than all the other ones is, you know, when we first got on MySpace, it was the race to have whoever had the most friends.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, this is the exact opposite.
Really?
You can only have one friend on Pear.
Really?
It is literally whoever you choose, your partner. And that person is the only one who interacts with you.
Huh.
So, you know, usually it's, you know, your spouse or your
significant
girlfriend
other.
Or boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah, or partner, whatever. But it's kind of fun. At first I was like, that's really stupid. And I still feel like it's kind of stupid, but it's a lot of fun. Me and my wife have been playing with it since the 3rd. And you can chat back and forth.
Uh-huh.
You can send audio files. You can send videos back and forth, pictures. You can even doodle together. So like you'll both pull it up on each other's device and you can draw and the other person can draw. And
little hearts over
little
the
hearts
eyes.
And yeah. And you can also you can erase the other person's work, which was kind of frustrating when we found that out. Like, stop it, why are you erasing my stuff?
Does that have any location based stuff? Can your wife see where you are?
It doesn't track you like Find My Friends or like Google Latitude, but what it will do is you can send your location.
Okay.
So you can pull up Pear and, you know, tell your partner what, you know, where you're at.
Nice.
You can also do it where there's this funny little feature it's got called Thumb Kiss. And what you do is you hold your thumb or your finger, I guess it doesn't matter, on the screen, and it tells the other person, hey, you know, your partner wants to do Thumb Kiss with you. So they pull up their app, they see where your thumb is, and they hold their thumb up against it. And if they hold it there for just a second, the phone vibrates, and it's a little thumb kiss.
That's cute.
It's so dorky and stupid, but it's kind of fun.
I think it's cute.
So, and you can also do like a little thinking of you, and like I said, you can play videos. Let's see, what else does it have? Yeah, thumb kiss, location. You can do live sketches, like I was saying, where you're both drawing at the same time. Or you can just draw something and send it to the other person.
Cool.
And what's nice is you don't have to have it running all the time. It will give you a notification.
Okay.
You
can go into the background.
Yeah. So it doesn't constantly be running on there and they'll still get a hold of you.
I think that's kind of a cool concept, actually.
Yeah. And it's completely private. Nobody else can see it,
which
I guess that could get dangerous for some folks. But you can delete things, which I kind of liked. So if you send something that you regret later, you can go back and delete it.
That's important.
And you can unpair yourself from someone else
if that comes to that.
But it's fun, too. You can also, on there, you can put your dates, like anniversary, your birthday, your partner's birthday. And you can do shared tasks, which I thought was really nice.
Huh.
Me and my wife, we both have iPhones, so we both use reminders and share a reminders list. But if you didn't use that, this would be a great thing because you can, you know, write down, hey, we got to get this taken care of, whatever it is, you know, go to the grocery store or whatever. And when you check it off, it's checked off on your partners as well.
That's very cool.
And also, there's a moments tab where you can go back and look at all the pictures and drawings and all the little silly stuff that you've shared back and forth.
So the iPhone, bringing people together.
It's all cutesy. It's just all cutiness. So it's enough to make me gag. But
you're using it.
I'm using it. I like it. That's actually cool. It's kind of fun. And it's, like I said, it's just between me and my wife. So, yeah, it's a little bit more intimate.
Yeah.
So what have you got? Any others?
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is kind of a weird one. And honestly, I can't vouch for its accuracy, but it's cool.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if it's on the iPhone or not, but there's an app called Instant Heart Rate.
Okay. What does it do?
It actually will attempt to take your pulse through your phone.
Really?
Yes. You do not need a special connector or an extra device or plug-in. What you do is you start the app, and you put your finger over the camera lens and the flash, and it will start flashing the flash, and supposedly that allows the camera lens to read your pulse.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Sounds like a scam, I'll be honest with you. It sounds completely bogus.
Well, you know, I'm not a medical professional, so I've done the app, and it gave me a heart rate.
Yeah. that sound, seemed legitimate.
It seemed legitimate. I'm really interested. Maybe next time I go and see my doctor for my annual checkup or something, I think I might pull that app out, run it, and then compare that to the number they give me.
Yeah.
So I don't know how well it works, but it's kind of cool. It's like, are you serious? You can check your heart rate with an app? Well, that's, apparently you can.
Yeah.
There's an app for that.
Get back to me and tell me if that's accurate. I'll see if we got it on iOS too. Another app for that's actually on both Android and iOS. It's been around for a while, but I really enjoy it. It's called SoundHound.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may be familiar with Shazam,
yes.
Which you use to detect,
I love Shazam.
To find out what song is playing. You just let it listen to it, and it figures out what song
Again,
it is.
I'm a music fan, so I'm always like, when I'm in a restaurant and I hear something, that's cool, I like pull out Shazam immediately, yeah. And then you'll see me wandering around the restaurant holding my phone up trying to get a clear enough signal so that Shazam can tell me what the song's called.
Well, here's the thing. I love Shazam for that very reason, and now they've got it on TVs as well. But SoundHound will actually show you the lyrics of the song in time with the song.
Really?
So you can sit there and like do a little karaoke action and sing along with it, even if you don't know the words, like most of us don't know the words to
Well, and that
a
could,
lot of
that could also
songs.
Have another use too, because there's been a couple times where I like, you know, found out what the song was, went and downloaded, and I was like, oh, those lyrics are a little more spicy than I expected.
That's true. Oh. Yeah. Well, real quick, you got another one.
Yeah, and this is just, this one is one of those apps that's, it's not really spectacular, cool, like, you know, that the heartbeat checker. But it just works so well that I use it all the time. It's simple. It's great. It's called Astrid, A-S-T-R-I-D. I don't know if it's on the iPhone, but it's basically just a task manager. You can make simple lists and to-do lists and grocery lists is what
and
I
widgets,
use for
right?
all the time. And it has a widget yep. or that you can put on your desktop and you can see what tasks you have available. And then, of course, it has reminders. So I like Astrid a lot. Great task app.
All right. Well, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we got some of your questions. And if you haven't already, show us some love and subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast
yeah.
app. If you have already subscribed, leave a review for us on iTunes. The more subscribers we have and reviews we get, the higher we'll be ranked in iTunes, so we'll get even more listeners. You're listening to Deemable Tech. Welcome back to Deemable Tech. I'm Ray Hollister, joined, of course, by my co-host, Tom Braun.
Hey.
Before we jump back into your questions, or actually answer some of your questions,
mm-hmm.
Something I mentioned right before the break was subscribing to our podcast.
Yes.
And if you haven't done that, and you regularly listen to the show, or even if you don't, and this is the first or second time you've ever listened to the show, do us a big favor and go ahead and subscribe to the show in iTunes or in your favorite podcast app.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because every subscriber that we get helps to boost our rankings in iTunes.
Yeah.
Which means that more people will see Deemable Tech when they search or browse for podcasts in iTunes.
Yeah. And even if you have already subscribed, do us another favor and post a review. Because
yeah,
the same thing goes for reviews. The more positive reviews that we have, the higher we'll be ranked in iTunes. The more people will get to listen to our show.
Yeah, it really makes a big difference. In fact, if you want to pause us right now and go ahead and do that, that'd be fine.
Yeah, we'll wait.
Actually, we'll just keep going because they have a pause button.
Oh, but that's right.
Yeah, go ahead and do that because that would be really awesome. Okay, so you're back? Okay, great. All right, now it's time for a segment that we do actually have a name for, and that name is Debunkable, the part of the show where we take the craziest email forwards, retweets on Twitter, and shares on Facebook that we see and find out if there's any truth to them or if they're all bunk. This week, our debunkable segment comes from Facebook.
So many Facebook myths out there.
Now, I know, you know, we've all been there. You're innocently checking your Facebook status, and you think about someone from the past. Mm-hmm. So you look them up, and then you start looking at their status updates just to see, you know, what they've been up to since the last time you saw them. And, you know, before you know it, it's 2 a.m. and you've been staring at their pictures for the last 3 hours. I mean, I'm not the only one, right? Come on, Tom. I mean, I know that you have found yourself at least one time creeping on someone's Facebook page without realizing you were doing it until you've been doing it for hours. I mean, everybody does it, right? Seriously, come on. I mean, Tom, nobody listens to this podcast. Be honest with me. Admit it. You know what I'm talking about.
Okay, maybe once or twice.
Okay. See, and here's the thing. Since we know that, you know, we've done it.
Sure.
And we know other people have done it, and we're not creepy, despite our profile pictures right now.
That's right.
Have you ever wondered if someone has been stalking you?
Yes, I have.
And, you know, creeping on your Facebook profile. And the worst part is, if someone was creeping on your Facebook profile page, there's no way to know, right?
Right.
Right. Well, according to our latest debunkable story, apparently you can now find out who's been stalking on your Facebook.
Really?
Here's a status update that we recently saw on Facebook. New update from Facebook. Now you can check who visited your profile. Check here, --, Facebook profile viewer, registered trademark. Who's watching your profile? The app claims to tell you who's been watching or viewing your profile and how often they've been viewing it, even if they're not your friend. So, Tom, what's the story here? Is there some awesome or maybe not so awesome feature, depending on who you are, of Facebook that lets you know who's been creeping on your Facebook profile?
In a word, no.
But, Tom, I just read it. It's on the internet. It must be true.
Yeah. Well, like any good myth, legend, or fairy tale, the story works better if you include an ounce of truth. So first, let me start by giving you the whole truth. There aren't any apps that would do what is described in that post because it would violate the Facebook terms of service.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, there are a couple of Facebook apps that can give you some information, but it's not really useful information. It's not what they claim. They can't tell you how many profile views you have, who exactly is viewing your profile. And most of the apps that claim to do this are simply scams.
Really?
They won't tell you how much people have been viewing your page or who has been stalking you. The only thing they might tell you is who of your friends on Facebook has been commenting or posting on your page the most, which you already know.
Right, because you can look that up yourself and see who's been posting on your page.
Yeah.
Ta-da! You already know that.
What they are very effectively doing is probably scraping as much personal information from your Facebook page as they can so that they can use that information and sell to data mining companies.
Oh, and that is a good reminder to be careful who you give permission to use your Facebook information.
Yes.
When you log into a website using your Facebook profile, read exactly what you are giving them permission to have access to, because if you don't, you don't know what they're going to do with it. Now, if that doesn't scare you, try this. There's a website called TakeThisLollipop.com, and when you go to the website, you're greeted with a challenge to take the pretty blue lollipop in the middle of the screen that clearly has a razor blade inside of it. Now, if you click the link, it asks you to sign in using your Facebook profile. Then it asks for a lot of permission to access things on your Facebook page, like your birthday, current location, relationship status, relationship details, your photos, videos, friends' locations, and photos and videos that have been shared with you. Basically everything on your Facebook profile.
Okay, I'll click yes.
Then, yeah, if you click OK, you're shown a video where you're taken down a creepy hallway into a dirty, empty room with a scary, dirty-looking guy staring into an even scarier-looking computer. He starts scanning through your pictures, spending a lot of time staring at a few of them. And it's really creepy because it's your pictures.
It's your actual stuff from your profile.
Yeah. So then he gets agitated and he flips to Google and types in whatever information you have about your current location. So your hometown or your address or even your GPS coordinates if you use share your location on Facebook mobile. Then he gets into his pickup truck, tapes a picture of you to his dash.
Oh my gosh.
And drives to your house. Now, then after it's all over, the lollipop turns to red and says that one of your friends is next. And actually, the first time I did it, it was you.
Oh my gosh.
It said, Tom Braun is next. And I was like,
No, don't
click. It really freaked me out. And honestly, I was glad that I watched it at night. Like, normally you don't want to watch scary stuff at night. But this time I was happy because it shows him driving the truck in the daytime. So I'm like, I'm good. It's nighttime.
He's not really coming to my house in a truck to kill me.
But he even like turns towards the camera and like stares at you. It's so freaky.
Wow.
Now, fortunately, that was all just a stunt to show people just how much information they're sharing when they give a website permission to access their Facebook account. And normally, I would never give out that, let a website use that much information mm-hmm. on my Facebook page.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the sake of journalism, I decided to go ahead and give it a shot. And it was awesome to check out. So I heartily recommend you checking it out, too, if you're up for a little scare. Then, when you're done, go into your app settings on Facebook under account settings and delete it.
Yes. Yes, you can delete apps. If you give permission to something one time, you can always go back and get rid of it.
And occasionally, just go ahead and do that anyway.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and check out app settings and make sure, is there anything that you've given permission that you don't remember giving permission
mm-hmm.
or you just don't use anymore? And don't take this the wrong way. You don't need to be scared every time a website asks you to log in using Facebook. But you do need to make sure that you read and understand exactly what it's asking permission for.
Yes.
And you don't always have to give the website permission to do what it's asking for.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, you can check off the box that gives the website certain permissions, like access to your news feed or access to your pictures or whatever. And you can still use Facebook to log into their website.
Mm-hmm.
So never feel bullied to do something you don't feel comfortable doing. So if you get an email forward to you or you see a crazy retweet or Facebook post and you want to know if it's true or fake, send it to us at debunkable@deemable.com.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's see. We've got a question from B. Really, it's B?
Yeah.
Like Aunt B? Awesome.
That's the name.
All right. Well, she writes, okay, stupid question of the day. If I sent someone a friend's request, but they didn't accept the invitation, funky in-law family biz when you have to friend someone if you friend someone else so nobody gets offended. Okay. Can this person see everything I post or not, since my Facebook page is otherwise not public? I did put her in acquaintances, so can she see the stuff other acquaintances see or not? And am I sure that she doesn't see more also? Thanks.
Okay. So to clarify the situation, B has invited someone to be a friend. They have not responded. She wants to know, can they see her stuff now?
Okay.
So B, actually, that's not a stupid question at all.
That's a pretty good question.
Yeah. Navigating the murky waters of Facebook relationships can be tricky, especially when Facebook doesn't really spell its rules out explicitly and changes them all the time. With that in mind, what I'm going to tell you is true today, but might not be true in the future.
Sure.
Well, Ray and I had a little bit of a falling out this weekend, and we temporarily unfriended each other.
It was very sad.
But it's okay. Now we're friends again. Yep. And in the meantime, we got to see what you can and can't see during the friend request process. So first of all, when you're not friends with the other person, you can only see their public posts and any personal information and photos they've made public on Facebook. To find out what information of yours is public, which is probably important for you to know, click on the down arrow by your name at the top right-hand corner of your Facebook page and select Privacy Settings. Then click on the Editing Basic Info link in the very first paragraph. And that will actually take you to your personal information page, and you'll see either a little icon by things like relationships. It'll have either an icon of friends, you know, like the little outline of people, or it will have a globe. Globe means public. Anyone in the world can see this.
Okay.
Friends means it's friends only. So that right there is something you should definitely do. Go through and see what information you are actually sharing to the world. There are further settings in the privacy settings that you should also definitely check out. Then anytime you post something, you have the option of making it public or friends only.
Right.
Yes.
So when you're posting something that you don't want the world to see, you know, change it to just friends.
Yeah.
And you can even do just me, which I thought was strange. Yeah. But, you know, if you're using Facebook as sort of a journal and you don't want something to be shared with the world, you could take the risk of just putting just me, and hopefully you're the only one who will ever see it.
Yeah, I would be careful with that strategy, because the one time that you forget to make it just me is going to be awkward.
Or the one time Facebook screws up and they do the settings wrong and with the world. Oopsie.
So use that at your own risk. But so anytime you post something, public posts are visible to anyone who has an account on Facebook. So basically that's anyone can see it, even if they're not friends with you.
Right.
Now to get back to B's question, is she officially friends with this person that she invited but did not respond? The answer is no.
Right.
You are not friends with somebody unless you have invited them to be your friend and they have accepted. You can find out if you are actually Facebook official by going to their profile page. Now, if you see a button marked as friends at the top of the page with a check mark by it, you are, in fact, Facebook friends.
Right.
Otherwise, you'll see a button that says subscribe instead. That means they haven't accepted your friend request. However, you can still tell Facebook that you want to see their public posts on your newsfeed by clicking subscribe. It's a little stalkerish, but, you know, you have the option.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, again, it's only public posts, so right. They are already voluntarily making it available to anyone.
And that kind of made them more competitive with Twitter back in the day when they established that, because you couldn't just follow someone who was sharing public information.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can.
Now, B, I think actually you mentioned in your email that you have a list of acquaintances, and you'd put this friend or in-law in the list of acquaintances. And I think you've done exactly the right thing here by taking advantage of the Facebook friends list feature. Having different lists of friends, because some people you're close to, some people not so much,
right,
is a great idea. And it gives you control over who is seeing what you post.
Sure.
You know, even among your friends, there may be things that you want your close circle of friends to see that you do not want, you know, this person you haven't spoken to since high school to see.
So how do you decide what you're going to post? I'm honestly just share everything with everybody. I don't care.
Well, here's my rule of thumb. This is kind of like the Tom Braun theory of internet. My rule of thumb for posting publicly on the internet is that you should assume that whatever you post publicly is going to be seen by the very last person that you want to see it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I have somewhat personal experience with this. I had a friend who had a blog in which he occasionally complained about a really annoying coworker. Now, this blog did not really have any personally identifying information on it.
Mm.
Yet somehow the coworker found the blog, left some angry comments, and they were not happy campers afterwards.
Okay, so when you say you had a friend, usually an that's you're really saying it happened to you.
No, actually, this one did not happen to me. It really
was
not
the hypothetical friend. It really is a real
friend. It's a real
friend.
Okay, yeah. And I don't want to say their name.
I feel sorry for him.
Yeah,
that sucks.
So Facebook recently passed 1 billion users.
Active users, yeah, not just users, active users.
Active users.
So every month, there's 1 billion people logging into Facebook and doing something.
When you post publicly to Facebook, realize that all 1 billion of those people can see what you posted if they so choose. Now, is the likelihood of someone in Russia going and looking at your Facebook profile real high? Probably not. But it's a possibility. So when you post something publicly, think about that. Is this something you want the world to know?
Sure. That makes sense.
So I'm not saying you should be paranoid, but you should be careful. You just never know who is going to see your post. My mama used to say, if you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. And that goes double on the internet.
That is very true. Well, let's see. We got another question from Jerry. Oh, another one from Jerry.
All right.
Can you read that one, actually?
Yes. She asks, what is the lifespan of a flash drive generally? Mine is old, but only had moderate turnover in data. It was my college one. Not sure if I should just use it for redundant photo storage. It's 1 gig. Thanks.
Okay. Well, that's a great question, Jerry. I had no idea what the life expectancy of a USB drive was, so I had to do a little research. I expected it would be somewhere around 5 to 10 years, just a wild
guess.
Seems
reasonable.
But unfortunately, it's not something that's impacted as much by time as it is by use frequency, how often you use it. So the fact that you didn't use it much in college may serve you well. There are two factors that affect how long your USB flash drive will last. The rating of the flash memory itself, the actual memory chip on it, and the rating of the USB connector. Now, the USB connector is the part that is most likely to fail the soonest. That's the part that you actually plug into the computer. USB Type-A plugs, which are the kind that most thumb drives use, are rated at 1,500 connections or 1,500 connections. So after you've plugged your thumb drive in, you know, 1,500 times, you're at risk of it failing. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but actually, if you only plug in and unplug your thumb drive once a day, it should last at least 4 years without giving you problems.
Okay.
However, let's say you plug in and unplug your thumb drive 4 times a day, you know, arriving at work, 2 breaks, 1 lunch, and finally going home. Your USB drive then would only last about 1 year before it could potentially fail.
Okay.
So it varies a lot. The other factor that determines whether your USB thumb drive will live long enough to collect Social Security is the rating of the flash memory itself. Some US thumb drives use what they call single level cell memory, which is rated for 100,000 write cycles. But the vast majority of flash drives use MLC memory because it's cheaper, but it's only good for 10,000 write cycles.
Okay.
So to answer your question, it depends. I mean, it's sure. based on how much you used it, so there's really no way that I can just answer your question.
Mm-hmm. Flat out. And it probably depends a lot on the quality of the
right.
thumb drive.
The case of the thumb drive makes a big difference because sure. the stronger case you have, the more likely it's going to last. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a couple of them that are made, you know, military grade.
Yeah, you,
know,
you get the aluminum yeah, outside. Yeah, really strong. Whatever.
And there's a couple of them that are designed. I wish I could remember the name of them. But it's designed for, you know, for heat, wind resistance, water oh, cool. resistance. It's incredibly strong. And, you know, that'll survive a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. I would guess if you use it sparingly,
yeah.
you'll probably get a few more years out of it. Without mm-hmm. any problems. But if you use it constantly, yeah, you might get a year out of it. So,
yeah. And flash memory is cheap, so you could easily go get another thumb drive, I would imagine.
Right. The thing to remember is back it up.
Back it up.
Back it up.
Absolutely.
Make sure that you've got it saved somewhere else because, I mean, they're going to fail eventually.
Yeah.
If the USB part goes out, if you're really a tinkerer, you can hardwire another USB on there, but you'd have to have somebody who's good with a solder gun.
Yeah.
So that would be
that would not
an option.
Be me. I would solder my hands together, yeah. be like Johnny Germain.
But yeah, the write cycles, like we were talking about, that generally it is the MLC memory, the multi-level cells. And because they are cheaper,
okay.
and that's what most of them are made with. So they only have 10,000 write cycles, which we talked about in a previous episode, the same problem that SSDs have.
Mm-hmm. Same technology.
You pretty much, you can only write to them so many times before they finally fail.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully they'll be making that better over the years. But for now, it's looking like 10,000 write cycles. So it, you know, that really isn't a great answer, but that's the best we can give yeah. you. Because
so the more you use it, the faster it's going to burn out.
Sure. And like I said, in your specific case, yeah, you're probably fine for a few years. Well, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got more of your questions. You're listening to Deemable Tech. Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A. Edelson LLC, Simple Green Technology Consulting, on the web at aedelson.com, and by Jack's Computer Guys, providing desktop and laptop service for all of Northeast Florida. On the web at jackscomputerguys.com.
Welcome back to Deemable Tech. I'm Tom Braun, joined, of course, by my co-host, Ray Hollister.
That's right. We got another email. Let me see. Want me to read this one?
Yeah.
Okay. Amber writes, I'm helping my best friend plan her wedding. And we've been putting things to like the guest list, the schedule, and possible caterers in Word and Excel and emailing the files back and forth. This worked well at first, but now it's gotten hard to keep track of all the different versions of the file. And we're never sure we're looking at the most recent one. Is there a way to have a document that multiple people can work on at the same time without having to email back and forth?
Amber, I have two words for you. Google Docs.
Yes. Google Docs is amazing.
Yes. Google Docs are actually part of what's now called Google Drive. But basically, they are Google's answer to Microsoft Word and Excel. Now, the nice thing about Google Docs is it's completely web-based.
Yep.
So you can access it online. There's no need to email. It's out there on the web, so it's centralized. And what you can do is you can create a document under your go to drive.google.com, create a document, and then you can share that document with whoever you like, as long as they have a Google account, basically.
Right. Yep.
And you can grant the ability to edit it, to just read it or even just add comments to it.
And the nice thing is, even though it is web-based, I've used it on some of the oldest computers in the world, and it still works fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it works great, even on Internet Explorer. It works best in Chrome. I mean, that makes sense, yeah, because Google makes Chrome as well. Mm-hmm. But it's worked in every web browser I've ever tried it. So.
Yeah. No, and, you know, for basic stuff, it's great. Now, it's not as fully featured as Microsoft Word is, obviously. But if, for what you're describing, it's going to be great. A really cool feature about it is the editing is live. So if you and your friend who's helping you plan the wedding are both working on the document at the same time, you can actually see that. You can see the cursor. You can see the changes happening. You can even open up a chat window in the document and chat with the other person.
Yes, it is really fantastic. That's one thing I love.
Yeah, and if you want to have control over the document and just want the other person to view it, that you can give them the ability to highlight anything and add a comment about it on the side of the document. So if it sounds like we are big boosters for Google Docs, we really are.
Yep.
because we use them pretty much exclusively for collaborating on our show notes here at Deemable Tech.
We're literally looking at Google Docs right now.
Right now, yes. They just work amazingly. Recently, Google has even started offering an offline mode for Google Docs, so you can work on them even when you don't have an internet connection.
Which is fortunate, because we just lost our Wi-Fi.
Now, so, I think you do need to have Chrome for the offline Google Docs
that's
to
true.
Work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So
how do you use it? How does it work? Explain that to our listeners.
Well, you need a Google account, a Gmail account, whatever. Sign into that. Almost everyone has Gmail now. Why don't you have Gmail?
Or if you have a YouTube account, or if you happen to have a Google Plus account first, that too would work.
Yeah,
they're all Google
anything
accounts.
Google related. So sign into that, then go to drive.google.com, and a box will pop up with a tutorial, but you can pretty safely skip it because this is basic stuff.
It is pretty simple to use.
Yeah. On the left-hand upper right side of the screen, you'll see a red button that says Create. Click it, and you'll create a new document online. It'll ask you, you know, do you want this to be a Word document, a spreadsheet, etc. Or you can click the up arrow next to the red button, and you can upload an existing document into Google Docs, and it will convert it into its own format.
Yep.
Once you're in the document, click on the File menu and select Share at the top. Share it with others. It'll give you a number of options in a window that pops up. And that's pretty much it. That's all you have to do. It's just really easy and really useful. And the great thing is that Google Drive is available as an app for mobile phones and tablets as well. There are apps for both Android and iOS.
Finally.
Yes. So you can access your documents from your iPad.
Yep. For the longest time, and I complained about this extensively.
You did. You would not.
Google came out with an app for iOS, but it did nothing except for view the app. But fortunately, they did update it recently so that you can at least edit your documents. Now, spreadsheets, you still can't edit in iOS. Yeah,
okay.
Unfortunately. And that's one thing to let our listeners know. If you're a heavy spreadsheet user, you're probably not going to be satisfied with Google Docs.
Sure.
I mean, if you use a lot of functions, a lot of macros, that sort of thing, unfortunately, Google Docs is not going to satisfy you and take care of that. But if you're just using it for a basic chart or a basic, you know, to keep track of things, it is absolutely awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the easiest way to do a document, especially if you're collaborating with someone
else. Absolutely. If it's something you got to share, and you do not email back and forth. That's a huge pain. You will get out of sync.
One nice thing about it is with Gmail, if you've got a Google Drive account set up, you can open it in Google Drive. So if someone sends you a spreadsheet or a Word document, you open it in Google Drive, it's in your Google Drive account, and now it's a Google Drive document.
Yeah, it's actually done that for me sometimes when I didn't realize it was doing it. I would open the attachment, and then I'd be like, wait, why is that showing up in Google Drive?
Yeah, but, you'll have occasionally where, you know, you'll have some formatting issues where it doesn't work perfectly. But you can use it'll accept Pages documents if you're a Mac user, and it'll accept the most recent versions of Word, too. So it's pretty compatible.
It's nice.
It is really fantastic.
Okay, we have another question. This one's from Catherine. I'll go ahead and read it, I guess.
Okay.
She says, hey, guys, can you help me out with something? I just got a new phone about 6 months ago, and apparently the guy who had the phone before me didn't exactly pay his bills in a timely fashion.
Oh, no.
I have been getting nonstop collection calls and surprisingly telemarketing calls ever since I got the phone. Is there an app for that? Can I stop the calls from coming in, or can the phone company block them?
You know, you were telling me something about this on your Samsung.
Yeah. Okay. This is specific probably to the Samsung GS3, so I don't want to say this is a general Android thing. But on the Samsung GS3, you can set a list of phone numbers that will automatically be blocked. It sends them directly to voicemail. They do not passcode. Nice. They do not ring your phone in any way. So quick walkthrough is basically that you open up the phone setting or go into the phone mode in Samsung and then just click settings and scroll down there and you're going to see a thing about call blocking and that's what you want.
Okay.
And you can set that up real easily. Now, if you have another Android phone, there are apps for it. A good one is an app called Call Blocker by NQ Mobile. So check that out.
Well, and I remember my old Palm Pre, that was one feature that I really liked about it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't come with it built in, but you could do homebrew, which is kind of like rooting or jailbreaking. Right. And I could set it so that it didn't ring or that it would go directly to voicemail. I could even do it where it would get special answers. So they would they'd get the ring, you know, oh, this number's been disconnected. So unfortunately, iPhones don't have anything that cool, at least not yet, unless you jailbreak. If you are jailbroken, you can download an app called iBlacklist from Cydia, which is the app store for folks who have jailbroken their phones. Now, we haven't tested either app. No offense, Catherine, but I'm going to assume that if you had to ask us, you're probably not jailbroken or rooted either.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a couple of low-tech solutions that might actually solve your problem easier. There's a solution. There's a kind of a passive solution, and there's an aggressive solution. First, here's the passive solution. What you have to do is create a person in your contact list whose name is Do Not Answer. In that person's contact info, put the phone number of every bill collector that calls you and change the ringtone of that contact. Now, here's something you can do that's really tricky. You can change it, of course, to something other than your normal ringtone.
Right.
Or if you want to get really creative, you can download a silent ringtone so it doesn't do anything. And then you'll never hear it when they call.
There you go.
Also, make sure, of course, to turn the vibration off for that contact. Now, except for the missed call notifications, they won't bother you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a more direct approach that you can do, and it involves actually talking to these people and getting them to stop calling you.
Really?
Yeah. No. According to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which is FDCPA, calling someone who is not the debtor, not the person who owes the debt, is actually against the law.
Oh, really?
If the collector has been informed, either verbally or in writing, that the phone number is not the debtor's.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get a call for Tom Braun because he owes $1 billion to Capital One, just to pick on a random one.
It's more of the mafia.
And I say, hey, this is not a number for Tom Braun. You can't continue calling me at this number. If the collector continues calling me, they are breaking the law.
Hmm.
Now, grab a pen and paper and take a few deep breaths. And here's what you have to do. If you receive a call from somebody else, do this. Like I said, grab a pen and paper, take a deep breath, then take notes of when the call came through, the time and date, the phone number they're calling from, which is going to be on the caller ID, and the person that they are calling for, in this case, Tom Braun. also, ask them, and what's your name? Okay. And what's the company that you're calling from?
Mm-hmm.
Get the name of the company they're calling from. And if you're really brave, can you give me the address of your company? Get that from them. And then any additional information they provide, like reference numbers, accounts numbers, employee
ID
numbers.
It's like turning the table on.
Oh, it is really. Now, then, after you've gotten all that information and be really helpful, be like, oh, okay, let me get some information from you. I'll see what I can do. After you do all that, then tell the caller that this is not a contact number for that person, and they may not use it to attempt to contact that person again. Also, let them know you do not have a contact number for that person. And here's the clincher, any further calls to this number will be considered harassment under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act and will be reported to the Federal Trade Commission.
Nice.
Now, finally, confirm that the caller understood what they were just told and end the call. You don't have to tell them anything else, answer any more questions, or provide any information. And if you receive a call from an automated system, do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just notate all the information, call the number back, and follow the same procedure. Now, I'll be honest, the first time I tried this, I almost had a panic attack. It was just such a confrontational situation, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. But it gets easier every time you do it. I had a guy, I've had I moved to a new office at work. I got a new phone number, and I'm having the same problem. Mm-hmm. And I had a guy call me the week before last, and he laughed and said, oh, okay, so you've been through this before, haven't you? I laughed, and I told him, yeah, this is the fourth time I've talked to someone at your company this week. So please make sure and take the number off the account, because until then, I'm logging every call. He stopped laughing at that point.
Nice.
And keep a log of every call. File a complaint of every call to the FTC after you've informed the company, written or verbally. And because mm-hmm. your complaints can help them detect a pattern of wrongdoing and help to lead to investigations and prosecutions.
If you don't tell them about it, they won't know about it.
And also, you know, if it continues to happen after you've told them to stop, you might want to consider getting a lawyer. They are possibly committing a crime against you and maybe causing you harm that you deserve compensation for. Hmm. So for more information about the FDCPA, visit the Fair Trade Commission's website, which we'll include in the show notes.
Okay.
So I know a lot of people deal with it, but you don't have to. And there's two ways to deal with it.
There you go.
Yep. Well, we got another question. Another one from Jerry, actually. All Tom, right. Can you grab that?
I'm our friend in Africa, yeah. I'm looking for a recommendation for a good external hard drive to store media and such on to free up hard drive space for when I go back to Africa. What do you guys recommend?
Ooh, I hate answering this question. It's really hard to say which company makes the best whatever.
Right.
Because it can be so subjective.
Yeah, and you will, you know.
You're going to ruffle somebody's feathers.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, we do rate and review some products on our website at deemable.com, but it's far from being all encompassing at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
I looked on Amazon, and Seagate is by far the highest rated external hard drive manufacturer. They have the first 22 highest rated external hard drives for sale on Amazon.
That's pretty good.
And Western Digital has the next 14 highest rated. Okay.
And those guys are the major hard drive manufacturers. I would expect that from them.
Absolutely. Now, on the flip side, on the bestsellers list, you have Western Digital on the top. But there's a lot of Seagates and Western Digital all spread around the top 30 spots. So there's no clear winner there. I checked out CompUSA or Tiger Direct's website. And both the highest rated and the bestsellers list are a little bit more diversified,
mm-hmm.
but Seagate and Western Digital are both highly ranked there. Personally, I've had a Seagate hard drive fail on me, so that doesn't really prove anything, but personally, it makes me hesitant to go back to them.
And I can also speak to that. I've had both fail on me, so
yeah, there you go.
It happens with hard drives.
They're going to fail. We've talked about that before. Now, if you have money to spare, which I know you don't, but if you did, I would tell you to get the IOSafe Rugged Portable. This thing is absolutely insane. It is crush resistant to up to 5,000 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
It's not only water resistant to 10 feet depth for up to 72 hours in fresh or salt water.
Wow.
But it can also be fully immersed in diesel fuels, oils, hydraulic fluid, or aircraft fuels.
This is like the Arnold Schwarzenegger of hard drives.
It is really intense. Also, it's resistant to continuous exposure to UV, blowing sand, blowing dust, rain, salt, fog, icing, or freezing rain.
There you go.
And it's also fully suspended in all six axes of motion of the yeah, you know, so
yeah.
You can't drop this thing and it break.
Okay.
It's really well built.
Nice.
So basically, you can jump out of a plane, land in a river, go swimming across a river, and use it to beat off a crocodile, and it'll still be fine.
Not a bad deal.
And here's the only problem with it, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's $179.99 for 500 gigs.
Yeah.
So it's
quite steep.
Yeah. Or $303.99 for 1 terabyte. So, but you're definitely paying for what you get. Now, if I was in your shoes, I would probably buy a 1 terabyte Western Digital My Passport.
Mm-hmm.
They run about $99, and they're relatively small. They can fit in your pocket. They have laptop hard drives in them, so they're smaller, and they're usually more durable. And also, for $20, you can pick up a Nomad rugged case for the Passport.
Okay.
The case is impact and water and dust resistant, and of course, I would get both of them. It's obviously not going to be as durable as the IOSafe Rugged Portable, but it's going to be a lot more durable than most.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever you get, make sure it's small. Like I said before, the smaller laptop drives tend to put up with more because they're designed to be mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I would say to make sure that it has USB 3.0.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Even if your laptop doesn't have 3.0, it's worth it because that means it'll be faster on other computers and your future computer.
The speed difference is huge. And you're going to be transferring, since it's a hard drive, presumably you're going to be transferring tons of files to it.
Absolutely.
So having that speed boost is going to really make your life easier.
Yeah. And also, I know in your case, Jerry, you're going to have limited access to the internet, but I would consider getting some online storage space. No matter how good of a hard drive you get, like we've talked about time and time again on the show, there is still a good chance that you're going to lose that data. And whether it happens through hard drive failure, which it's going to fail at some point, or just from losing the hard drive, you know, if you back that thing up online occasionally, there's no way you can lose it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to spend any money, Dropbox will give you 2 gigabytes for free.
And plus, you can actually do some various things to get a little extra storage for free.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
You if can you tweet about with, them or share on Facebook, they'll give you another 500K.
Box, Google Drive, which we talked about earlier in the show, and SugarSync will give you 5 gigs off the bat for free.
Yep.
Windows Live, SkyDrive will give you 25 gigs.
Wow.
And MediaFire, which I had never even heard about until I researched this for the show, they'll give you 50 gigs for free.
Wow.
And sometimes you can get a Box account, too, which will give you up to 50 gigs. I've got that. They do all have paid options that do get kind of pricey really quickly, but if you want some freebies, you can check them out. Also, for $99 a year, you can get Carbonite Home Plus, which will back up your entire computer and external hard drive. So that's something to consider, too.
Yeah. So, we say it every week on the show, backup, backup, backup. Hard drives inevitably fail.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's just a matter of time.
Yep.
Yeah. And like I said, online storage can get really expensive, especially if you're using it like for a sync, like Dropbox. But Carbonite is a great plan, and you know, you can do a one-time backup, and then you know, when you're out in the field, you know, you get access to the internet, you can do it again. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that is all the time that we have for today. Thanks for your emails, and of course, keep them coming. Questions@deemable.com, and call us. Leave us a voicemail at 904-372-3336. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a good review if you enjoyed it. And if you don't enjoy it, you know, still go ahead and leave us a good review. We won't tell anybody. Our producer is Sean Birch. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening and have a great week. Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A. Edelson LLC, Simple Green Technology Consulting, on the web at aedelson.com, and by Jack's Computer Guys, providing desktop and laptop service for all of Northeast Florida, on the web at jackscomputerguys.com.